Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, adolescent depression and suicide. Our guest is Dr. James Wellborn. Dr. Brad Hoover may join us during the show. We'll see about that later. You will remember both of these doctors as have been frequent guests. Now, a great big welcome to you, our guests, and to you, our listeners. Now, my short monologue, taken from the Washington Post, November 23rd, 2020. And I quote, "The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently asked young adults if they had thoughts about killing themselves in the past 30 days. One in four, that's 25%, said they had. That number was up from 10% who said yes 2 years earlier in August 2018. And for people of all ages, the rate rose from 4% to 11% in those same 2 years. In the Chicago suburb, DuPage County, reported a 23% rise in suicides compared with last year. And in Chicago itself, the number of suicides among African Americans has far surpassed the total for 2019, even as officials struggle to understand whether the deaths are being driven by the pandemic, by racial unrest, or both. What has shocked medical examiners most was a suicide by a 9-year-old child. Now, a field work study in August on the coronavirus's mental impact found that the youngest people surveyed had the highest rate of increased anxiety, depression, substance use, and other mental problems. Jonathan Singer, a suicide researcher and president of the American Association of Suicidology, said, "At that age, when you're looking for your place in the world, searching for your identity, to be struck in life right now, not able to get a job, not able to plan to see a way forward, to be home and feel like you're a burden, it's challenging, to say the least." Experts warn that toxic mix of isolation and economic devastation caused by the COVID pandemic could generate a wave of suicides, but those dire predictions have resulted in little action. One of the few actions undertaken by the U.S. leaders this fall, after a decade of discussion, was to authorize a 3-digit number similar to 911 for people to call during a mental crisis. But the 988 number won't take effect until July 22. And crisis centers in charge of those calls are facing severe cuts because of the pandemic has decimated state and local budgets. Suicide thoughts are not the only signs of crisis. Other maladies often bubble up first. Alcohol consumption, anxiety, depression, unemployment, homelessness, domestic violence, post-traumatic stress disorder, drug use, all of them elevate suicide risk. There is no question that this is a major problem, but what can we do about it? My first thought is that if you're depressed or too nervous to enjoy life, see somebody in the mental health field and get help. Remember that you influence your kids in so many ways, and we've talked about this so much on the air, that treating a depressed parent often treats his or her children as well. So don't be afraid to talk to your kids about your feelings of depression and how you are getting help. They will most likely already know you are depressed and will be delighted to know you are taking steps in the right direction. They will also learn that when you are, or if they are depressed, they can talk to you about getting help. Nothing beats family communication. Let me repeat, nothing beats honest family communication. They will learn that if they are or become depressed, they can talk to you about getting help. Now, to tell us more about this problem, I've asked Dr. James Wellborn, a psychologist from Brentwood, whom you know, and the emergency care physician, Dr. Brad Hoover from Brentwood, to be our special guest. Brad has had some type of emergency, I suspect, and he's not able to join us today.
Yeah, I'm here too, Parr. I can jump in or let Jim jump in.
Welcome, Brad. I have the first question designed for you. You are the one who's responsible for us doing this show, because some time ago you told me that we should have show on the pandemic and its effects on depression and suicide in young adults. That's a lot to talk about. So why don't you just jump in and tell our listeners what you see, what you think we can do about it.
Yeah, a couple of things, Parr. Just for introduction, I've been an ER doc now for almost 31 years, so I've seen a lot of things, and I encounter a lot of teens and young adults with depression, either, you know, both pre-pandemic and certainly during the pandemic. And what we're seeing is what you're reading about, is that how they're more, you know, isolated, and that means more time for social media, which I think is can be, you know, beneficial in certain respects, but it has to be controlled. You know, there's a movie out on Netflix called The Social Dilemma that some of the listeners may have seen, and we watched it at home. And, you know, what it is these kids are spending not just 2 and 3 hours a day on social media, but 6 and 8 and 9 hours a day, you know, with the pandemic, and there's nothing to do, nothing's open. And these folks are on the, you know, Instagram and Facebook, they're on YouTube. And these marketers for these social media platforms, they know how to pull the kids in, and adults for that matter, and they know how to keep them, right? They keep suggesting videos, they keep suggesting a content for them. And, you know, you just click and click and click, and pretty soon you're in a rabbit hole for, again, you know, sometimes up to 8 and 9 hours. I've read about and heard about and actually seen. I have to admit, you know, sometimes, you know, my wife and I are, you know, busy for the day, and maybe we're, you know, watching a movie on our own, and we look up, and, you know, my son's been on his Xbox for sometimes that long a period of time. It's kind of embarrassing to admit, you know, but it's true. And so those have a lot of downstream effects. You know, the kids don't interact like they used to. I mean, sometimes they text, you know, to each other and in the same room. I mean, they don't, you know, hardly talk anymore. And the dating aspect has gone out the window. There's just not a whole lot of traditional dating anymore. It's all about, you know, let's meet here and let's link up here. And that, you know, affects both the male and the female. So I see these depressed kids in there, and I can talk about drugs in a minute, but just for the straight up, you know, depression, you know, they're lonely, and, you know, they may or may not be on medications, but that's, I'm seeing a lot of social media effects. And so that's the first part of it. I want to let Jim, kind of curious to what he's seeing on that, in that realm.
I think that's true, Brad. All of us really know that this is a kind of catastrophic convergence of a disruption of every level of our lives. And that alone just throws everybody for a loop anyway, especially for teenagers, where their social relationships with peers is really part of this developmental stage. That's what teenagers start to do, is pull back from the family being primary and move into their peer groups. And all of that got ripped apart. And so all of the, and then when you add to that, the other kinds of ways in which teens are just beginning to be able to reflect upon themselves and to be aware that people think about them certain ways. And then they self kind of critically evaluate themselves. And some of the ways that you get out from under that in a natural kind of aspect is by being around other people and about being around your friends and getting validation, not explicit like, oh, you're a great person, but just the nature of being around people who like you and want to be around you and that kind of stuff. And all of that kind of thing was disrupted and then got magnified because there's an additional level of separation of particular peer groups. And so there have been times, for example, when parents during the pandemic would say to their kid, well, you can have two people over. Okay, they're trying to be like responsible about not having a group of folks. Well, what that meant is that a group of 5 or 6 or 8 kids who are all a common group got winnowed down to the top people of the group. And so all of the kids who weren't included, even though it's kind of understandable, they don't have that experience when they can all hang out together. But when you have to select, then suddenly they're rejected by their peer group because of the circumstances, not because of their actual kind of priority in there. So these things add up, and then you add in all of the complications and the influence, as you've talked about, I think, really clearly and accurately about social media, and also all of the ways of looking at things on the internet, kind of what you're exposed to and what you're being socialized with. And so it's been a mess.
I would like to comment on that, because what you're seeing is that especially middle school kids are pack animals. They're like wolves. If they run in a pack, you don't just have one over, man, you have all of them over, and you never see one without the other six. So it's a real challenge for them to be excluded or to exclude someone in their group.
Sure. I think for sure. Hey, I'm seeing the same thing with teenagers, but teenagers have a little bit more of their self-development under their belt, so to speak, so that they have a little bit more resilience to that. The middle school years is especially hard for the effects of social groups, inclusion and exclusion that goes on with that. And so I think that's true, Barb.
And then to make matters worse, just as they're trying to separate from their parents are just as anxious as they are, because dad's laid off or mom's laid off, or they both are. And
right. When you add that into it. And the other thing is that they're also, the kids have also been forced to spend all of their time with their family. And that's also exaggerated the kind of potential rubs, the potential conflicts that are just typical, but got relieved by kids going to school or hanging out with their friends. They were only there like a couple of hours with breaks in between. And so it was harder to get into the parents having 3 hours straight now to be able to talk to their kid about all the things that they need to do or what their future is going to be like, or all of those kinds of things can also go on and create a kind of artificial level of conflict in this.
Brad?
No, I just echo what Jim had to say about that. I really feel sorry for these kids these days, all the social media pressures that they're under. We didn't talk about the affirmation they get, and this goes for adults too, I'll have to admit, but you look on Facebook and they really count, how many likes they get and how many, comments they get on a certain post. And if they don't get enough of that affirmation, that kind of sends them more into a tailspin of depression. So it's just a never ending cycle. I don't know. I know this is not a talk about addiction, but that's another thing that I see. Obviously, these kids come in and, not so much opiate for this age group and not so much alcohol, though that is a problem. But I'm seeing more things like the ADHD medications that are used, without prescription, like the Ritalin and the Adderall, and I'm seeing certainly marijuana, which is a gateway drug. And the kids, just a lot of them just don't believe that it is. They think it helps them to relax and it helps them to, expand their mind. I mean, I talked to them before, why do you do this? And they want to argue. They want to, tell me why, and that it's not as dangerous as the media makes it out to be. And, of course, all the recreational marijuana that's going on around us. I saw in the paper today where Illinois has okayed recreational marijuana, and as has Virginia. So, I mean, it's coming, and it's a problem that just won't go away.
Brad, have you, in the emergency department, have you seen an uptick at all in kids with substance use? The reason I ask is because it's actually been harder for the kids that I work with because their parents are around all the time. And so I'm wondering whether I've just got whether that's different about when you're looking at it from the emergency department view of kids showing up for problems like that.
I think that's a good point. I guess to answer your question, I've not seen any uptick in that. That is correct. I mean, the kids who, were on it before, maybe they're continuing to use, but I've not seen any upticks. But one thing that we are seeing is that, just like you said, these kids have been away from it. The ones that are addicted, say, for example, opiates, and this goes for young adults too.
Right.
The ones that are addicted will be off on it for a while, then they'll get exposed to it again, but their resistance and their tolerance level is way down because they've been off of it for so long, and then, what happens? Overdose. That's what happens. And so, we're seeing the overdose. I think we're going to hit 100,000 overdose deaths in this year, in 2020 alone, which is very sobering and it's very distressing.
Yeah. What about cutting? Have we seen an increase in cutting?
I have not seen any increase in cutting, no.
Yeah, I don't know. It hasn't been a particular thing that I've experienced. One of the things about cutting and other kinds of the related self-harm is that that tends to not end up in emergency room visits. It tends to be more likely to end up in a therapist's office. My suspicion is that there's going to be more of that because of what tends to be the case for kids who either have cutting be something that they do, or who basically are prone in some ways to try and regulate and deal with their internal kind of turmoil and feelings and distress by doing that. And so my guess would be that there's likely to be an increase, especially because, part of you were talking about at the beginning of the show, the dramatic increase in people who report, teenagers who are meeting the criteria for depression and for anxiety, that it's like in the 80s. It's hard to get this data real time because of what it takes to analyze it, but there was a company that did online surveys of screenings that people could sign up for, and they had like 1.5 million people that were part of their data set, and they included kids 11 to 18. And the frequency of kids across adolescence that were meeting the criteria for anxiety who were taking those screenings was like 80%. And the percentage for depression was, it started out kind of 70% at the lower adolescence and moved up into the 80% for the later adolescence. And so extraordinary.
Right. Right. I'll add that if you break that down further, you're going to see that it's more girls than it is boys. The adolescent girls have much more problems. It's just skyrocketed this past year. I've seen data on that. You may have too.
Yeah. One of the things that before all of this, the difference for depression in girls is if you look at the overall stat in 2017, it's like 13% of kids meet the criteria for depression, and 20% of girls and 6% of boys. So that 13% means 20 is an averaging of the 20% of girls who show that depression versus 6% of boys. So for depression, there's a dramatic difference. Now for anxiety, interestingly, the numbers are almost equal and it's all about 30%. And so males and females are really closer together when it comes to anxiety, teenagers. But for depression, the girls are at significantly greater risk, for sure.
So that was a survey done in 2013?
That was 2017. Yeah, that was one of the last.
It was before the pandemic.
That's right, before the pandemic. But the ratio showed up the same thing. It turned out with that screening study, the difference between males and females was the same. It was that same kind of discrepancy.
Well, now we know that there's a problem. What can we do?
Right. Okay, got to go now. Y'all take care.
Go ahead. What can we do about it? I mean, does counseling help? Do they need medications? Do they need to kick in the butt? Do they need to be some...
It starts at home, Paul. I think Jim will agree. You know, when I see these kids in the ER, you know, either they're from a broken home or there's no parents at all. There's a grandparent or somebody or an uncle. You know, family friend. And so there's a lot of dysfunction within the nuclear family. And I think it all starts there. I mean, not that, you know, kids from nuclear families can't have problems, but the ones I see much more often, I know you've had a talk about, you know, this problem, family, you know, brokenness before, but it all begins there. You know, counseling is certainly important. You got to find the right counselor. Medications, I think when used judiciously for the right reasons, it can be beneficial, but we've just got to get improvement in the home.
Well, Brad, you know, I have a different actually experience with the folks that I see. My office is out in Brentwood, and it tends not to be more directly related to family things in the sense of the brokenness of the family. There's various levels of conflict. And of course, when there is a disruption in the family and when families have to break up because of divorce, separations and divorce, and then blend back together, there's all of the conflict that goes around that. But there's also plenty of kids who, like plenty of people, have dispositions for this that they come in. There, some of it is neurobiological in terms of neurotransmitters and the various aspects of depression and anxiety, kind of systems in the body, but also about kind of ways of tendencies about how to think and how to view things and what expectations that you have and that kind of stuff. And so it's a bit broader for me about what are the things that contribute to that. And there's oftentimes that I have parents coming in who are completely confused about this. It's shown up that their family is going along like most families, and then their kid is starting to sink more and more and more. So, and I fully expect that to be especially likely, it has been during the pandemic, but also afterwards, because one of the problems with when you start showing meeting the criteria for depression, that can have predictive effects for years afterwards about your own adjustment. And so the idea here is first about just looking at your kid. There's times, you know, the criteria, the kind of signs of depression are poor performance in school. Well, we've got problems with the shifting back and forth and online and that kind of business. So you can't really know whether that's because of the structure of school or not. There's sadness, there's hopelessness, there's irritability, there's whether they're kind of crying and having times of tearfulness, with being withdrawn, a lack of interest in activities or being bored by things, problems with motivation, changes, you know, more eating or less eating, more sleeping or less sleeping, agitation. Well, the problem that I've run into with the symptoms for depression is that about half of them just describe teenagers. And so it gets kind of confusing about whether that's okay for where the teenager's at or whether that's worse. And what you add to that as a parent is to talk to your kids. And that's generally true anyway. And part of that's, of course, one of the things that you mentioned in your introduction when you were starting this off. But I think it's even more important than usual because this pandemic has had a dramatic effect on kids who otherwise would not be having these experiences. What this has done is thrown in a whole nother bunch of kids that are not the kids who would otherwise, under typical circumstances, be struggling with depression or anxiety or those kinds of things. And so making sure as a parent, you know, this is a real risk. And it's important enough that instead of expecting that you're just going to see the signs, that you actually have a conversation with them about that. You know, I heard this radio program the other day, and they were really talking about how tough the things during the pandemic have been for teenagers. What's been going on with you? Have you been feeling, you know, have you been feeling down? Have you been having kind of depression, or have you been feeling pessimistic and stuff? What's going on? That's one of the kinds of things that occurs to me.
You know, I think the parents find it so hard to talk about things like this with their kids. And I think one thing that helps them is if they say, do you think the kids that you associate with are having problems with this? Get them to talk about their peers first. And then if you go right. wild and nuts, tell them they all need to be kicked out of school or whatever, then they're going to clamp down. But if you agree with them, sympathize with them, and get them on your side, then you ask about them, are you having thoughts like this? Then they're right. much more willing to talk to you about it. So I start with, you just start with the school kids, and then with their friends, and then with them, and get down to it. And they will tell you pretty much everything you want to know, and a lot of things you don't want to hear.
Right. I think so.
You mentioned some of the signs that your kid may be getting depressed and may be suicidal. And I just want to add just a couple more that from the Society of Adolescent Medicine. I think the American Society of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry has some behaviors they call pre-suicidal. And that is a kid who complains about being a bad person, feeling rotten inside, or gives such hints that says, I won't be a problem for you much longer. Don't worry about it. Nothing matters anyhow. I won't see you again. those kind of things are really scary. They say things like, I want to give away their favorite things, or they give something to their friends or their parents, or I don't need this anymore. All of a sudden, they become cheerful and they've been depressed. They say, oh, something's going on here. If your kid has those kind of things, then I think they need to see somebody in mental health, not tomorrow morning, but tonight, right now. I think that's really important. Brad, do you have any closing remarks?
Yeah, you know, you talk about depression and suicidality. You know, a lot of that stuff is very impulsive. You know, the kids are just, maybe they have planned it out, maybe they haven't. We see a lot of near misses where, you know, the kids just did something on a whim. And I know this is, again, this is not the subject of this talk, but, you know, research is pretty clear that if the one first question we ask kids are the guns in the home. And if so, you know, the risk factors go up. And so you have to secure those guns and keep the ammo separate and all that. I know that's another subject, but it's a real risk factor because these kids get impulsive. They don't, and they probably, after the fact, a lot of these kids wish they hadn't have done it. So I'm really interested in asking that question when I have these kids in there. It's one of the first questions we ask, that along with any other substance of abuse they may be under. But, yeah.
Jim? The thing that I want to add to the end of that is that with suicide, 94% of suicides fail except when a gun is involved. And when a gun is involved, 90% succeed. And most of the people who don't succeed do not try again. And so that issue about firearms is crucial when it comes to risk for suicide.
Well, it's about time to wrap this up. Thank you. It's been a great pleasure talking with both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before I sign off, one quick story. One morning while working for the military, I saw two 17-year-old boys, men actually, whose dads had committed suicide. One was 13 when his dad decided he had had enough, and the other was 17 when his dad left the planet. Later that day, I met a young man of 19 who had attempted to hang himself when he was 16. Fortunately, the anchor holding the rope to the rafter broke, and the boy's life was safe. I returned home with a heavy heart, only to hear on the evening news that 20 U.S. veterans take their lives every day. Most of these are men between the ages of 24 and 29. Then that evening, I read a report from the JAMA Journal on Psychiatry. Investigators had studied all the people born in Denmark between 1967 and 97, over 1.7 million of these. If there was a relationship between parental mental illness and suicide or violence, then they found a very heavy, heavy increase in the kids' reaction to violence, with violence, and suicide. I'm sorry to end this show with such a sad story. But suicide is all around us. We just can't ignore it anymore. So for your homework, get your family together and listen to the show again on parenting-matters.com. Then ask your kids if they know anyone who has talked about hurting themselves. Ask them how they reacted to when their friend said this. And then ask your kids directly if they have had any thoughts of hurting themselves. And if any answer they have is yes, get them some psychological help immediately. Not tomorrow, but immediately. Then send us a comment about your children's reaction. Remember, talking about suicide will not make them likely to try it. And then in families, nothing beats honest family communications. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.